You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
All right, here we go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Man, after a weekend of garbage and blowouts last week, the NFL delivered. Only the NFL can deliver like that. Baseball is great, and I love the postseason. Hockey playoffs are tremendous, and NBA playoffs, obviously, they kick it up a notch, but there is nothing like division weekend in the right. NFL. And this one in particular, got to be the best divisional weekend we've ever seen. I'm not going to call last night's the greatest game ever, although certainly it's got to be on any top 10 list. It's one you're going to have to remember. There have been some real doozies, and I don't want to be just completely prisoner of the moment, but to see all four games come down to the final play the way it did this weekend, I don't know that I can remember anything like that. So at the risk of somebody else remembering a better weekend, this one will have to go down for now as the best in history. That was tremendous. Just great action, back to back. I sat in my house. I didn't leave my house from noon on Saturday until this morning. I didn't shower from Friday night until this morning. I loved it, and I was mad for a lot of it because I had a rooting interest, but I just enjoyed the entire thing. Close games, high drama, incredible moments, boneheaded plays, decisions to second guess, essentially perfect. It felt like two teams were on a different level, though, right? Like, you watched that game, you saw eight teams play. Who were the two best teams you saw this weekend?
Bills and Chiefs.
It's not close,
yeah.
Right?
Not close.
Now, it doesn't mean that the Chiefs are going to end up winning the Super Bowl,
yeah.
But watching those eight teams play, if you were now to have to rank them, they'd be 1-2, right? And it would be like almost 1A, 1B, and then somebody else would have to be 3.
Well, Mahomes and Allen did something that before that no other quarterback in NFL history had done. ESPN said them each throwing for at least 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. They completed at least 70% of their passes without an interception. And they led their teams with at least 65 yards rushing. And then they said up until that point, no other quarterback in NFL history Remarkable. Had accomplished those feats, and they both did it.
And both guys ended up breaking Bart Starr's record for quarterback rating, which had stood for more than 50 years.
Wow.
I mean, like, when you see some of what we saw last night, and I know I'm a prisoner of the quarterback position. I think it is the most important and the most interesting, and I just love watching the quarterbacks. What those two guys did last night was really, truly phenomenal in every way. Quick question for you. If that was the first and second best team you saw over the weekend, who was the third best team you saw this weekend?
Honestly, I really would have thought it was the Titans if Tannehill wouldn't have fallen apart like that.
Who was the third best team you saw this weekend? Based on what you saw this weekend, not based on the whole season, based on what you saw this weekend, who's the third best team?
Rams.
Right? It's probably the Rams, which doesn't feel good to say,
no. But
it was probably the Rams. I mean, I still feel like the Packers are actually the third best team, but they sure didn't show it. And special teams ended up becoming a problem for them. And as much as that is painful, the Rams were probably the third best team, which means they're the second best team left remaining. Ugh, that doesn't feel good to say at all. That's just obnoxious right there. So that was one of the things I guess we learned this week. And we also had three road underdogs win and very nearly a fourth. Right, we very nearly went 4-for-4 with road underdogs winning on the divisional weekend in the NFL. That's remarkable. It made me think of David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell, which I've talked about before in the air. I don't know how many times. It's an interesting book, but it's just so incredibly relevant over and over again for sports fans that if you have an opportunity, it is 100% worth your time. Go read Malcolm Gladwell's David and Goliath. There's so many times that being disadvantaged ends up working to your advantage in sports, whether it's being an underdog or not having as much money to spend or being in the wrong city or being drafted in the sixth round. There's so many of these cases where you can see some of the advantages of maybe being doubted or being disadvantaged. And two quotes kind of jumped out to me from this weekend. The first is this one. You can't concentrate on doing anything if you are thinking, what's going to happen if it doesn't go right? To me, this is one of the central questions in sports these days. I watch a tremendous amount of golf. One of the hardest things to do in sports is to have the lead on Saturday night heading into the Sunday final round of a major because you're thinking about it. And you can't concentrate on doing anything if you're constantly thinking what's going to happen if it doesn't go right. Most people know this from their own life, right? Whether it's playing golf yourself or being on a free throw line in a big moment, any of those times where you start thinking and negative thoughts creep into your head, what happens if it doesn't go right? It's why Russell Wilson spends so much time thinking and talking about his neutral mentality, right? Not thinking about what will this be like if I win? What happens if I lose? He doesn't think that way. He stays in the moment. He's able to concentrate on what he's doing rather than to think about the things and the other thoughts that can creep in. And if you are constantly thinking, what's going to happen if it doesn't go right? Yeah. And I wonder if there's some additional pressure on the two number one seeds who ended up losing yesterday. I wonder if there's some additional pressure on the other two home favorites, one of which lost, the other of which, I don't know, maybe we put Patrick Mahomes in his own category because what they did in that game was almost just completely unique. But based on the three interceptions thrown by Ryan Tannehill and the way the Titans lost that game, based on the mistakes made and Aaron Rodgers not doing much of anything in the Green Bay loss, another number one seed that just didn't have their good stuff, didn't have their good fastball on Saturday night, and then the Bucs and Tom Brady getting in a complete, I mean, they came out and played awful. It wasn't until they were in this same spot that they ended up playing well. It does feel like it's easier to play well and to play better at times in the NFL and in all leagues when there's nothing on the line, or when you are down by so many that the other team starts to get that pressure on them and starts thinking, what's going to happen if it doesn't go right? We better play prevent defense to make sure. We better lay off. Think about the mistakes the Niners made that nearly let Dallas win the game a week ago, right? They had that game won, and they let it get in their head. How about the Bills last night and their head coach? They had that game won, and then with 13 seconds left, they make a couple of mistakes. They don't kick it to a spot on the field where they would have to field it, and that would take some time. They didn't off the they don't hold the guys coming off the line of scrimmage, which could have forced a couple of penalties, but run off the rest of the clock. And instead, Patrick Mahomes ends up beating them because they didn't, you know, weren't thinking about what they needed to do. Instead, maybe what happens if it doesn't go right. So I found myself thinking a lot about that quote. The other one is this: there's no possibility of being pessimistic when people are dependent on you for their only optimism. Let me read that one again. There is no possibility of being pessimistic when people are dependent on you for their only optimism. I think about that in terms of Russell's neutral mentality. I think about that in terms of the whole Chiefs, and specifically with Patrick Mahomes at the end of the game, 13 seconds left, down three. What does Andy Reid tell him?
But it looks pretty grim there. What, do you have any special advice to Pat right there? Do you have any words for him at that point when Buffalo took the lead for the last time?
Yeah, when it's grim, be the grim reaper and go get it.
Do you think he actually said that? Because it would be remarkable if the question asked specifically used the word grim, and then Andy Reid decided that in the moment, like 20 minutes earlier, he had used a grim play on words with grim and grim reaper. That would be an incredible coincidence, right? So I don't know whether he actually used those words to Patrick Mahomes or whether he just sort of improvised that later after the question came in. But either way, it's that idea of, hey, everyone around me is looking to me. I'm the leader of this team. When people are dependent on you for their only optimism, might as well be optimistic, because pessimism doesn't work in that spot. And so does that help Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs win the game? I don't know. I don't know whether any of this truly matters, but when you're looking to try to figure out why a pattern occurs like that, yeah, some of it is that the NFL ends up just providing a tremendous amount of parity. But when you have three underdogs win and very nearly four short of a complete miracle, I can't help but wonder whether there's a level of pressure that exists for the NFL, because we see it in other sports all the time. We see favorites go down and really struggle with that idea of being of the expectations of what's supposed to happen in that game. That's how David ends up beating Goliath, or one of the many ways in which David ends up triumphing over Goliath. They're able to take those advantages that Goliath has and use them against them. And I think that's what we saw some of this weekend.
That second quote sure sounds like a lot like Pete, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's no possibility of being pessimistic when people are dependent on you for their only optimism.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like something Pete would say.
And not something Bruce Arians would say.
He's probably like friends with Malcolm Gladwell.
I can imagine.
Right?
Definitely
like
see
they
that.
Seem like they'd just be boys. They've known each other forever now.
Sharing one-liners back and forth.
Yeah, they were also college roommates like he was with Scott Boras. Like Pete just, he's one of those most interesting men in the world people where he's like, oh yeah, no, I know that guy.
Yeah, I definitely believe
well,
that.
Well, back when I was producing Clayton's show, we had a guy named Ryan Holiday on who wrote a book called Ego is the Enemy.
Okay.
And it's like a lot of those same, but the weird thing is you imagine Pete like that. But John Schneider is very into it, too. And he said he got the idea from someone that worked for Belichick and that he's very into all of that mentality.
Ego being the
too.
Enemy?
Hmm. Well, just kind of getting into the mentality and not letting the negative overtake you, not letting things that go wrong overtake you, looking forward.
I saw that book on the shelf but thought that I was too smart to read it, so I just didn't even use it.
Surprise.
Ego's the Enemy.
Yeah. I only learned how to read like 3 weeks ago, and I thought that's really good.
Kind of a dad joke. Anyway, sorry, I've been around the kids a lot this week, and as I said, I didn't even leave the house. The other thing I found myself thinking a lot about this week, and was just...
Don't act like that's not something that happens every other week.
That I make dad jokes?
Yes.
I'm a dad. What do you want in my life? I've got two kids. I can't
help it.
You're
making up excuses about being in the house all weekend. That's nothing to do with it.
I also feel like you look forward to telling us dad jokes.
Who doesn't? That's the point of being a dad, is you finally get to tell all of the dad jokes you've had your whole life.
To your kids, right?
Yeah, well, to anybody, really. I mean, I think it bleeds out. Yeah, it just kind of bleeds into the
and
rest
for other
of your
dads
life.
To absorb and then share, and it's just this whole dad energy.
Yes.
Yes.
The dads need to bond that way, man. It's not easy being a dad. You got to kind of find your community that way. I wonder where some of these quarterbacks will be in a few years. It was not that long ago that we were all talking about Andrew Luck and Cam Newton and obviously Russ and Kaepernick and that generation of quarterbacks that all kind of came up together. And it, you know, who's the best? Andy Dalton, maybe even throw him into that list. He was sort of on the outside of it. RG3 maybe kind of faded pretty quickly just because of the injuries. But, you know, which of these guys has the staying power? Are we going to be seeing all of these quarterbacks over the next few years? When you start looking at the AFC, my gosh. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, right? All young, and I don't see any reason that any of them would fade. I mean, I guess people were saying the same thing about Luck and Cam and others a few years ago. But Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, plus Lamar Jackson, who's won an MVP, plus we'll see if Mac Jones, Justin Herbert, or Trevor Lawrence can join them in that category. I'm not writing off any of those three guys. Mac Jones makes the playoffs as a rookie. We'll see what he does next year. Justin Herbert very nearly made the playoffs this year, and I think there's a lot of hope for him moving forward. And while Trevor Lawrence was in a terrible situation this year, he was still a number one one. And so he was considered to be one of those, great hopes of the future. Let's see what happens with Trevor Lawrence before we write him off after one season as well. So the AFC may be stacked with quarterbacks moving forward. And then in the NFC, it's really more of the veteran thing, right? It's Rodgers and Russ and Stafford and Brady still. We'll see what happens with him and Rodgers. Maybe you put Dak in that league. And then after that, what, Kyler Murray is sort of the only real young up-and-comer in the end. We'll see what happens with Trey Lance. We'll see what happens with Justin Fields. But neither of them have shown much. I guess I could put Lawrence in that same category, just that he was just, such a highly touted prospect and not supposed to be as much of a miss. Yeah, I'll be curious whether or not that next generation ends up challenging some of these guys or whether we are in store for something ridiculous in the NFC for the next decade. Is this Brady Manning too? I mean, it's got all the makings, two guys in two different divisions, but in the same conference. Now, whereas Brady and Manning were both pocket passers, these two guys do it with their arms, with their legs, with all of it. I mean, just it's remarkable what the two guys do. But is that what we're looking at now with Mahomes and with Allen? We might be. We very well might be.
And this isn't even mentioning Fields or Tua or Hurts. Like there's
Yeah, I'm not mentioning those guys.
For on purpose?
Yeah.
Really? I thought you believed in Fields.
I mean, I saw him play. I mean, he hasn't done anything to show that he belongs in this conversation.
Okay.
I like with Justin Fields, I like him on paper.
So in the NFC, you're talking about the vets, Rodgers, Russ, Stafford, Brady.
Yeah, I mean, maybe somebody like Fields could show up there. Maybe Trey Lance will show up there. Trey Lance has only taken a few snaps, and what we've seen was terrible. Justin Fields had a bad year.
Yeah, I'm not mentioning Trey Lance.
Right? And I probably shouldn't mention Trevor Lawrence either because he really didn't do squat. I guess I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass just because the situation was so messed up in Jacksonville this year. And also just the amount of talent that he's supposed to have and picked one overall and all that. Maybe I shouldn't even include him. But I think what we've seen from Herbert and what we've seen from Mac Jones making the playoffs, what we've seen from some of those other guys, it completely overshadows. I mean, Tua, no thanks. I mean, Tua's fine.
Hurts made the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not putting him in this category, man. I mean, I'm not putting him here. Sorry, okay. And I like Jalen Hurts, but I don't see him as being somebody who has the potential to win multiple playoff games over the years. I don't see that the same way I might for some of the others. But when you look at the real specific, the guys at the top, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Lamar Jackson, those four in the AFC, that could make for a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Moving forward, we'll see, though. Because, again, it was not that long ago that Cam Newton was supposed to be in this list, that Andrew Luck was supposed to be in this list, and here we go. Neither of them are relevant at all in today's NFL. Things can change very quickly. All right, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
An all-time NFL weekend capped off by an all-timer for an NFL game. What a night. All four games decided by one score this weekend, three by last-second field goals, one in overtime. I don't think you could draw it up any better than that. Let's start at the end. 28 points scored after the two-minute warning in Kansas City as Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs eventually get it done. Pick your favorite play from this one. It was just a highlight reel back and forth. How about Allen on 4th and 13, a 27-yard dart for a touchdown, or Allen on the ensuing two-point conversion, staying alive to make the throw and converting. Tyreek Hill running back that punt. Hill sprinting 64 yards for a touchdown. That was ridiculous.
Down the middle. It's Hill in the open. Cuts it upfield. He is! Kansas City takes the lead with a minute to go from 64 incredible yards.
Amazing. Mahomes goes 44 yards in 13 seconds for the tying field goal, or even Mahomes throwing two beauties to wrap things up in overtime. Not too surprising, including the finale to Travis Kelce. Just great. 42-36, your final. I was definitely happy to see Mahomes and the Chiefs win. Overtime rule, though, it's dumb. It was dumb when it prevented him from getting a chance against the Patriots 2 years ago. It was dumb when it let Allen rot on the bench yesterday. It's just a bad rule. Both teams should have an opportunity to possess the ball in overtime. Yes, it should be fair. No, that's not a participation trophy. No, that you don't need to make it so that every team gets the same number of possessions in the game. But you'll notice that whatever team kicks off in the first half generally doesn't have to kick off in the second. That's the NFL trying to even things up. All sports do this in some way, except for the NFL overtime rules. They need to be changed. On, earlier in the day, a game both teams, I think, deserve to lose in Tampa. Tom Brady nearly brought his team all the way back, down 24 in the second half. Bucks came all the way to tie it. Three fumbles sure helped, the last of which allowed Brady a chance to score with 42 seconds left and tie the game. After a sack forced the Rams to call their final timeout, looked like overtime was inevitable. That is, until the Bucks decided to blitz? No!
Stafford, deep downfield! He's got Kupp again! He's at the 10. Stafford says, let's get down there. We got to clock it. We got to get the field goal.
Absolute communication mistake for the Bucs and Bruce Arians, Todd Bowles. They not only blitz, but don't tell everybody on the team so they don't all know it. You end up with a safety on Cooper Kupp. That's how you lose a football game. My gosh. On Saturday, we got to see both number one seeds, but not for long. Both went down at home on last second kicks. We'll start in Green Bay. Jimmy G and the Niners offense managed just a paltry 6 points. They did get quite a lift, though, from their special teams. A block punt for a touchdown, a block kick to prevent three more points. That was the difference as they win 13-10. Other than those special teams plays, I would say Deebo Samuel had the biggest moment of the night. 3rd and 7, final drive, not in playoff range yet, and he does this.
Deebo gets it. Samuel breaks a couple of tackles, doing it all. First down inside the 30.
He says doing it all, it sounds like to win it all. That's essentially what Deebo did for them on Saturday night earlier in Tennessee. Bengals defense steals the show, stole the ball 3 times. They pick off Ryan Tannehill. None bigger, though, than with 20 seconds left in a tie game.
Tannehill steps forward, popped up in the air, intercepted. Logan Wilson's got it for Cincinnati.
Brock likes to talk about crucial errors. That's a crucial error. An incompletion, at least, and you're just punting. It's overtime. Instead, you're going home because of just a awful decision and even worse throw from Ryan Tannehill. Credit to the Bengals. Joe Burrow threw for 348, continues to look like the next Tom Brady in so many ways. Poised, comfortable, etc. Add it all up. You got an all-time horror movie in the NFC. Rams and Niners in LA. Just awful from a Seahawks fan perspective. Though it might at least offer some insight into why they've chosen not to make major changes here. In the AFC, we'll see the Chiefs and Bengals as Mahomes tries to get to his third straight title game.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Baseball, not really in direct competition with football, I know, but after watching just the incredible drama of the divisional round this weekend, I sure hope it puts a little extra incentive out there for the players and owners to figure out some kind of a deal before they even miss spring training games. Two sides set to meet today in person as the players will present their counterproposal to what the league has offered. Not a ton to say about it yet, other than please, please make some progress. I'm begging.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Break up the Kraken, everybody. After losing 12 of 13, they've now won three of their last four. Split a pair of games this weekend. Friday night, we don't need to talk much about that. Blowout loss to the Blues, but we'll just let that go. Put that in the rear view because they came back last night, capped off a good weekend by taking down the Panthers for the second time this year. Florida's got the best record in the league. But Seattle just kept at it. Goals from Yanni Gord and Callie Yarncroke and Johansson and Blackwell. And then it was Mason Appleton with the big one.
We're back with you from Pittsburgh on Thursday. Appleton scores! There it is! Mason Appleton with his first goal in 16 at the absolute right time.
John Forslund was great last night. A big hey, hey, what do you say? That's Kraken hockey, baby, at the end. Philip Grubauer was magnificent, and they beat Florida 5-3. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour. We do that here on 710 ESPN Seattle all morning long. When you see the two NFC West teams in the NFC Championship game and know that the other third team, you know, the Cardinals also made the playoffs, does it make you think a little bit differently about why the Seahawks have decided to mostly keep this thing intact?
Why mostly intact?
Well, meaning Pete's not going anywhere. Russ doesn't. I mean, we don't know yet what's going to happen with Russ. But some of the big time changes that we were thinking about certainly didn't happen off the bat. Why? Right? The whole end of an era stuff that we heard about in the middle of the year. When you realize how good your division is, does it at least kind of change some of the thinking on that?
Yes, and I think the playoffs have only proved to me that like good coaching matters more in the last couple minutes than anything, and we have one.
Good coaching, good quarterback play, man. Yeah. It's really hard. Now, it's not impossible. The Niners certainly showed that you don't need a good quarterback to win on occasion.
He can try to lose mold, for you, and you can still win.
Especially if the other team makes mistake after mistake after mistake. But I think overall, right, if you've got a good quarterback and you got a good coach, you're a good percentage of the way there, aren't you?
Maybe that's the championship nucleus that he was referencing.
It should be. I mean, we all know this. Good ownership, good coach, good quarterback. That's your holy triumvirate in the NFL.
That's so disappointing about the last couple seasons, right? Like, you have a better quarterback than either of those teams.
Yes. Yeah, and you got to put the right pieces around him in order. And I think you have a good coach, too. I mean, I think Pete is good. And I don't think McVay coached a very good game yesterday. They managed to win the game. Do you think Sean McVay had a good weekend?
I was going to ask you if you think the best coaches are the ones advancing.
I'd have to kind of go through. I haven't thought about all that, but probably there's, I mean, I think the coaches that are left, I think Andy Reid's a pretty darn good coach. It took him a long time to kind of figure out the time management stuff that was a problem for him early in his career, but he kind of seems like he's gotten that done. Maybe it helps to have Patrick Mahomes on your side. I'm not going to lie. In the other game, I don't know enough about Zach Taylor to know whether he... I mean, I think Mike Vrabel's a pretty darn good coach. Unfortunately, I think he's saddled with a quarterback that just isn't very good. Yeah. They need a better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill in order to take that thing to the next level. And just sort of hoping he doesn't lose the game isn't enough. Especially,
maybe I was thinking LaFleur Shanahan.
In that one, I see them as sort of similar, right? I mean, LaFleur didn't coach a very good game.
Shanahan did more with less, is my mind.
He did. I guess that's fair. So maybe you do have to give Shanahan the edge in that one.
All I kept thinking was almost all of these coaches save their timeouts for when they need him, and I couldn't picture Pete Carroll doing that.
He doesn't care. He doesn't need those timeouts. But gosh, he's wrong on that one, man. He is dead wrong on that one. You need those timeouts. All right. It was a crazy weekend. We saw some of the most incredible moments by great players. And we saw some real brain farts. So I've got a little game to play next. It features some, well, I won't even tell you. You just have to stick around for it. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
One of the unique parts of this weekend, we'll talk to Brock Huard about the quarterback play coming up in 15 minutes. But one of the unique parts of this weekend was how many incredible moments it had and how many boneheaded mistakes it had. So I started thinking about all of the goats we had this weekend and all of the goats we saw this weekend. So I thought we'd play a little game, essentially goat or goat. Is it a lowercase goat, meaning you screwed it up, you're the goat, or this new version of the word goat, which is greatest of all time, the capitalized goat. So I've got some sound effects to help us kind of work through this. If it doesn't work, you can blame me. But in the meantime, I thought we would try to play a little goat or goat from this weekend. We'll start with Ryan Tannehill, who was not the good kind of goat. Yeah, he was the bad goat. Ryan Tannehill.
That's a goat?
Yeah, it's a goat. There's a lot of unique goat sounds in our system.
It sounded like a bird.
Yeah.
Just give it one more shot.
Brock and I used to play a game called Kid or Goat because it was somewhat hard to decide whether it was a kid or a goat, some of the sounds we have. But bad kind of goat for Ryan Tannehill. This play didn't help.
First play from scrimmage. Play action. Tannehill fires. Intercepted. Picked on the play by Jesse Bates.
So Tannehill has to not throw an interception there. Like, he blows that game. He just does.
I mean, Hilton also made a freak play on that.
No, that was on the second interception.
Yeah, they jump at the Wilson.
The third interception, right. He forced it into coverage when you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot throw a pick there. Yes, you're trying to win the game. Yes, all you need to do is go down and kick a field goal, and you've got to be able to do that. I mean, that's part of being a franchise quarterback is getting the ball in that moment, going down and driving your team for a win. But you can't make that kind of mistake, or else you know what you are? A goat. Right? You're a goat, not the goat. And that's what happens to Ryan Tannehill there. Next one for me will go the other direction. Same game. Evan McPherson, greatest of all time this weekend.
52-yarder. Sweeps the leg. McPherson. He's got it. Cincinnati wins.
Goat. A goat. Or the goat,
especially,
I guess.
Especially as a rookie?
Yeah, that was pretty darn impressive. He is he gets it done. Greatest of all time.
Is he 8 for 8 in their last two games?
Yeah, and he hasn't missed on the road all year.
Wow.
Pretty tremendous.
I'm the greatest of all time.
There he goes. Greatest of all time. And, by the way, before he did it, he told them he was going to. How about that? He's like, hey, we're going to go to the AFC Championship game. He knew ahead of time what was going to happen. That's some pretty good confidence. Best clutch kicker, maybe, since Adam Vinatieri?
Oh, it's the best.
I mean, obviously, Justin Tucker is sort of the GOAT when it comes to kicking in general, but are we going to put him right in that category?
Oh, that guy's unbelievable. He said, so he was talking to Brandon as he was going out to kick. He gave a little warm-up swing, and he said, ah, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good in the moment, right?
Wow. I'm the greatest of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. It. Play it for him. All right, let's go.
He looks 12, by the way. Like, did you see the post-game interview? I'm like, oh, you're a kid.
Yeah. How about Aaron Rodgers? Unfortunately for him, a goat in this one. One Super Bowl in Green Bay, 0-3 or 0-4 against his favorite team, the Niners. And don't forget, what did you say his record is now? 10-11?
11-10.
Oh, 11-10 overall in the playoffs. Unfortunately for Aaron Rodgers, he is the wrong kind of goat in this one. He may be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but this weekend, more of a goat. On the other side of it, Patrick Mahomes, straight up, greatest of all time this weekend. Put him in the GOAT category. He is hosting his fourth straight AFC Championship game. Guess how many years he's been in the league? That's right, four.
I'm the greatest of all time.
He's been in the league. Well, I guess he had the first year where he didn't play. He's been a starter for 4 years. He's been in the AFC Championship game all four of those years
looking
at home.
At going to his third consecutive Super Bowl.
That is truly remarkable. And what kept him from going to the Super Bowl the first time and the only time he hadn't? Two things. One, a completely ridiculous lined up in the neutral zone penalty from Chris Jones. And two, the same overtime rule that benefited him yesterday, where he didn't get an opportunity to win the game. A coin toss kept him off the field in overtime against the Patriots in that game.
Oh, and how they started this season. Do you remember all the conversation of like teams that lose the playoffs, or sorry, don't lose the
Super
Bowl.
Teams that lose the Super Bowl.
Don't come back to the playoffs.
Yeah. Blech. They found a way, and now here they are hosting yet another AFC Championship game.
I heard a lot of that talk from someone.
Who,
remember
me?
Yeah, I remember
it was me. I mean, it's the way it's been over the years, for sure. Teams that lose the Super Bowl have a really lousy track record in terms of making the playoffs the next year.
Yeah.
It's a credit to Mahomes, the same way it was a credit to Pete and Russ a few years ago. When you buck that trend, absolutely, you deserve a whole lot of credit for that. It happened to the Rams a couple of years ago, right? They lost the Super Bowl, ended up not making the playoffs. Happened to the Niners, they lost the Super Bowl and didn't make the playoffs. There's a proud history, or not so proud history, of teams that you could put in that category. On the downside, how about Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles goats, unfortunately, for their team. 60 yards they give up over the course of the game in terms of just boneheaded penalties. Two 15-yarders for kicking the ball out of bounds, and two 15-yarders, one for taunting and one for unsportsmanlike conduct. That's 60 yards that they sure could have used in that game, but not the worst thing they did. No, I think they are going to earn GOAT status for blitzing at the end of the game and not covering Cooper Kupp because you couldn't communicate it properly. That's bad. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Just a little bit of miscommunication in the hectic moments at the end. Slipped and fell and gave him that 7 route. And don't get the call in and get it communicated to all 11 guys.
Oh, RoboGoat.
What? Yeah. That's RoboGoat.
That's RoboGoat. We get a lot of different goats. That's the goat that Bruce Arians. That's what happens when you run the goat through the thing that Bruce carries on his chest.
What was that?
It sounds like that.
I don't know. It's RoboGoat.
There's some thought that it's an EKG machine. I don't know what it is.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think when you've eaten paint twice in your life, at some point, like, they make you carry that thing around with you so that you're not a like danger to yourself.
I don't want to make fun of him if it is something like that, but yeah, it's funny that he ate paint twice in his life.
Twice he was tricked into eating paint. Not once, twice. As a kid, the guy ate paint. So yeah, unfortunately, the wrong kind of goat for Bruce Arians. I don't like giving this guy a whole lot of credit, but Tyreek Hill, goat status.
Down the middle. It's Hill in the open. Cuts it upfield. He might be gone. He is. Kansas City takes the lead with a minute to go. From 64 incredible yards.
He is ridiculously fast, isn't he?
I'm the greatest of all time.
Yeah, he might be in terms of speed when he gets the ball in his hands. It's funny, the Chiefs have some players that are reminiscent of old Chiefs players. When you watch Tyreek Hill, don't you sort of see, what was the guy, the human joystick a few years ago? What was that guy's name? I'm just blanking on his name at the moment, but he was ridiculous. The kick returner they had, the Dante Hall. The X Factor.
Oh, a few years ago. That was a while ago. I was like trying 15. To think of someone more recent.
No, it was like 15 years ago. Isn't there like a little of that just ridiculous breakaway Dante Hall speed? When they threw him in there for the kick return, and it's just like, he's just toying with people. I just think of the whole X Factor, Dante Hall making the X sign. Just that extra burst and extra level of speed, and Tyreek Hill's just even better than that. He was phenomenal in the game, a complete difference maker. Remember when he wasn't healthy and wasn't even like supposed to contribute like that? Turns out he was okay. On the other side of that one, Sean McDermott, unfortunately, is the wrong kind of goat for a couple of different reasons. The way he handled the final 13 seconds of the game, I think it's a lot to ask that he be expecting the other team to come down and kick a field goal. You're not supposed to be able to do that. But he did not take every precaution necessary. I mean, between kicking the ball through the back of the end zone and then not holding those guys, I know it's sort of a cheap play, but we saw it a few years ago in the Alabama-Clemson finale. Like, you can hold them. It's going to be a 5-yard penalty. Okay, so what? They move up 5 yards, but you take 4 or 5 seconds off the clock, game over. It's only 13 seconds left. And instead, he gives Mahomes the opportunity, and he certainly took it. So, Sean McDermott. Dying goat, unfortunately. I relent on Josh Allen. He's a goat. I'm sorry, he's really good.
Fires it into wide open. Remarkable. Touchdown, Buffalo. Davis again.
God, I've got so many more of these. I've got Matt LaFleur, wrong kind of goat. I've got Cooper Kupp, the good kind of goat. I've got the L.A. fumbles, Akers, etc., bad goat. I've got Debo, good goat. I've got Garoppolo, almost a goat. And then you got
ways.
And then just for emeritus status, you got to put Brady in here. He's the actual goat, unfortunately, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got 6 championships. What are you talking about? There's no eh?
Wait, more than that, right?
No, it's 6.
Oh, wow. Okay. In my head, it was 7.
No, it's just.
I mean, without his defense breaking down, he might have been going to an.
He might have been. If he gets the ball one more time, if he gets the ball in overtime, do you think they win the game? Of course they
How
do.
Bad is it that I can't keep track of the amount of Super Bowls he's won?
It's just that many. All right, coming up next, I want to talk quarterbacks with Brock Heward. He was adamant that what he saw yesterday was not human. So what was it? We'll ask Brock that question and more next.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
All right, first of all, Justin, I'm sorry. It is seven rings. My bad.
Yeah, I was like, well, I'm going to defer to you here, but I'm pretty sure it's seven rings.
Six with the Patriots, one with the Bucs. But let's not question whether or not Brady's the GOAT, because I think that one is pretty well set in stone. Brock, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. I'm well. Very well. It's a good Monday. What a weekend. What a game. I turned to Titus last night, and I said, bro, he was rooting. He had his Mahomes jersey on. He's rooting for the Chiefs. I'm rooting for the Bills. And who obviously did not go my way at the end. But I said to Titus before I had to run out and pick up Molly at the airport, I said, Titus, I think this is a game in like 20 years, 30 years, we're going to be talking about still. Like that was as good as I've ever seen. I tweeted that. That was obviously consensus on social media from so many people last night. Not only the best weekend of playoff games, but that one in particular. I think I said to you on Friday, it's going to be bonkers, and it was more than bonkers. I mean, it was two guys dealing in a way that, man, I don't think I've ever seen Mahomes, Allen, QB play by two guys toe-to-toe like that all the way to overtime. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous, and clearly the two best teams I think we saw this weekend. It was funny. I don't know how you felt. I felt like the first three games were lost by the losers, whereas the fourth game was won by the winner.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair characterization. I mean, Green Bay, the third phase of the game comes up and just kills you. And that can happen if you let a team just hang around. Obviously, the missed field goal, the block punt, just awful, awful special teams. Tennessee, yes. Yeah, I mean, Tannehill, that's a couple picks that he's going to have to live with for the rest of his life. And that's... one of them was a great play by the nickelback. But, yeah, I think that's a fair characterization. And then, you know, I think it was Stacy that tweeted last night and said, can we just sign a petition and have these two play in 3 weeks in L.A. again? Because I think it would be a better showcase and matchup than whatever is going to be left of these four.
I asked Justin earlier, and I'll ask you, if those were the two best teams this weekend that both played together last night, who was the third best team you saw this weekend?
Probably the Rams. I mean, the fact that you can win after fumbling it away four times in the final minute of the first half and three in the second half. I mean, just from a pure talent perspective, I was looking at a graphic heading into the weekend. I think they had more five-star recruits right out of high school. I know this is the NFL. But I think they had more five-star recruits than the rest of the playoff teams combined. I mean, something absurd like that, just the level of star power and talent. That defensive line with Von Miller and Leonard Floyd and Aaron Donald is unblockable. Stafford, give him credit. He was phenomenal. I mean, he can wing it. I mean, he can really throw it. And to see him kind of step up at the end and finish it, just from a talent perspective, I think they would be the scariest in all three phases of the game.
Yeah, it probably is. But, man, they still seem to have this self-destruct button on them that makes it really hard to buy into what they do. Obviously,
And then they can't beat San Francisco.
I know.
I mean, that is the one matchup as you do this little jigsaw puzzle that is the NFC West, and this team can't beat that team, and that team can't beat that team, and that team can't beat just matchup-wise. What have they lost their last six games to the 49ers? So they can't just match up with them. And just when you want to discount San Francisco, well, guess what? Pete Carroll's probably bobbing his head watching that game Saturday night. Like, see, be balanced does win. See, Justin's cologne of John Schneider and Pete Carroll, that cologne and that aroma can go to Green Bay and win when you do it with special teams and you do it at the line of scrimmage. And you know, they're going to give the Rams everything down to the final second on Sunday.
Are you ready to relent yet on the overtime rule?
No. I have no. Buffalo, that was the stupidest, worst way, and you're going to live with those final 13 seconds for the rest of your life. Kick the ball to the 3-yard line and make them return it. Rush three and go double and tackle Kelce and Hill at the line of scrimmage. Take a defensive holding call. I don't care. The fact that you lose with 13 seconds, you have no.
But wait, but they didn't lose with 13 seconds. They tied with 13 seconds. Then the game ended and they went to overtime. They lost a coin toss and Josh Allen didn't get the same opportunity as Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so then Allen goes down, scores a touchdown, and Mahomes will get the ball back again and go score. And then are you fine?
Yes, okay, of course I am. Okay. Brock, okay. Imagine, right. We've said this a million times, but because I blow the game in the top of the ninth doesn't mean we shouldn't play a bottom of the tenth. Why would I get a shot and not you? It doesn't make sense.
Because you have every opportunity to win it in the top
no,
of the
I don't.
Ninth.
I don't have.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Finish it, Buffalo. Finish in the ninth inning, and you don't have to go to extra.
All right, so Brock, let's say you're a baseball team. You've got a 4-2 lead. You go to the ninth inning. You give it up and give up two runs. You lose? You deserve to lose at that point because you gave up the lead late? That's ridiculous. The game needs to have the same number at the end. Like, why wouldn't you give both teams a possession in overtime?
Again, give them both possession. Allen goes down and scores a touchdown. Great. Yep. And then Mahomes is going to go kick a field goal. They're done.
No, they're not done. You should not have an odd number of possessions in overtime unless you're going to use a time. Unless you're going to say the time is the answer, make it 15 minutes, play one more quarter, fine. But the idea
of... Your scenario, touchdown, field goal. Still, then Allen gets the ball again.
Yes, Brock.
Like you have to play a top and a bottom. No, I'm done with that. Nope. Too much ball. Take care of your business. Finish it.
But
finish
you're it, not given finish the opportunity it. To take care of your business because you didn't get to touch the ball. The same way Mahomes didn't get to touch it 3 years ago, and Aaron Rodgers didn't get to touch it in the NFC Championship game against the Seahawks. Ridiculous every time.
Play Ed Orgeron. Sack fumble. Okay. Sack Mahomes. Sack fumble. Sack fumble, take care of business, tip, make a play, get off the field defensively, right? Give your offense a chance. Yeah. So defense was on the field. The defense had their opportunity to do the job to start overtime, to get the ball back, and they couldn't do it. They were out of gas. They were done. And two of the great.
But so was Kansas City's defense, Brock. Kansas City's defense was also out of gas and done. And if they were having to go out on the field in overtime, they would have given up the exact same thing. It's just the way the NFL works. It is a league that is obsessed with offense.
Oh, it's a league that put on a show for four games this weekend. And as bad as the weekend was before, and we lamented last Monday, my goodness gracious. I had a producer friend of mine at Fox text me and say, I hope the ink is dry on the deal with the NFL and Fox, because whatever the NFL would want to ask, they could get. Like, you know, the numbers are going to be, I don't know if they're out this morning, what the ratings were, absolute insanity. It felt like America was watching every minute of every one of those games.
Yeah.
Ratings are going to be off the chart, and the brand just in the shield. Put on a spectacle this weekend, man. Special stuff.
Works every time. All right, buddy. Good stuff. Enjoy your drive. We'll talk tomorrow.
See you, buddy.
All right, there you go. There's Brock Heward every single morning at 7:45. I can read some of these texts if you want. Salk, you have a defense too. They can stop them. It's not all about offense. The NFL is all about offense. Every single rule in the NFL has been designed and tweaked over the years to make it easier on offense than defense, especially at the ends of games once the defense is tired. That's not true. It is all about offense. It's not one of these, well, no, it's balances. No. The NFL has made it all about offense at the ends of games. They've made it easier for your offense to score. Mike, you were wrong. Mike, you were right. If your defense can't stop them, you don't deserve it. But why does my defense have to stop them and not yours? That's the issue. I understand that, like, your defense should be able to come up with a stop, but why should one side have to do it and the other side isn't forced to do the same thing? Maybe we should make the Chiefs play the second half with their arm tied behind their back. Well, they lost the coin toss. Somebody had to play with their arm tied behind their back. These guys only get to use one hand. Well, but the other team got to use two hands. Yeah, they won the coin toss. So now they get two hands. Maybe in baseball, only one team should have to pitch and the other team should hit for nine innings. And then we'll say, well, why didn't you find a way to score on defense? You should have stopped them. You had your pitcher out there. Why didn't you throw a shutout? Why did your pitcher give up a run? Maybe in basketball, we'll just give the ball to one team each time. Every time the ball goes out of bounds, we'll just give it to them and say, well, you got to play defense. Part of the game. Come up with a turnover. Well, we knocked the ball out of bounds. Yeah, no, that goes to the other team.
Coin flip.
I mean, fairness is a quintessential part of sports. It's not everybody gets a trophy. It's not some newfound new age version of everybody gets participation.
Right.
It's just allowing both sides to have the same opportunity to win the game.
Would you like what the XFL did?
What was that?
They had, in overtime, each team gets 5 one-play possessions from the 5-yard line.
Oh, I remember that.
And a conversion counts for 2 points. So team A could score 4 times for 8 additional points, and team B could score, twice for 4 points.
I'm fine with that Mickey Mouse stuff during the regular season if you want to do it. But in the postseason,
well,
you should do it like hockey.
Well, have you told us what your
solution is? Yes, just keep playing. Like hockey.
And just no end time.
I mean, I would be fine with them going back and forth and just giving the same number of possessions to the same. Yeah, you get a chance to match. You go, you get a chance to match. You go, you get a chance to match. I would be fine with that. I would also be fine with, I'd almost be okay with the college rule, although I think that can be a little tricky because it's taking away like the need to sustain drives up the field. But I do think that they're in a tough spot. It's a weird situation. It always has been. But I think you've got to find a way for both teams to touch the ball no matter what. It doesn't make any sense that one team gets to and the other team does not. We got a full slate of takeaways. So many from 4 different games. It may take us the next half hour. Come join us. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.